Okay, we are here at the Model Seder 2024, 5784. It's going to be unbelievable. What is the goal? What are we trying to accomplish the night of the Seder? What do you think?
Feel like you left Egypt.
You're supposed to try to feel as though you... Well, were you ever in Egypt?
No.
Has anyone actually been to Egypt?
No.
Even if you go to Egypt today, which is not a great place for Jews still, unfortunately... it's still, you know, you wouldn't probably be enslaved. You might be attacked, but you wouldn't be enslaved like our ancestors were. And what is it? Like, how are we supposed to kind of feel? And I'm getting right into it. Like, how is this supposed to make us feel as though we were once slaves, and then we were emancipated, we were redeemed from slavery? So that's why the Seder really is supposed to be experiential, okay? I'm just going to pass around a little sheet that I prepared for you guys. The Seder is supposed to be experiential. These are props, basically. Because if you want to get yourself to feel something, you got to eat something, you got to get yourself into a different phase. The closest thing I ever came to it, I was in a hotel for Passover once, and our waiter at our table was Egyptian, which was kind of interesting on the night of the Seder. That was like the closest thing I ever had. It felt like, you know, I should maybe like really be mean to him. And you should pay back what he did to our ancestors thousands of years ago. There's one sweet, nice Egyptian guy that was there. So it's obviously not the same country. It's the same country. It's not the same people. But the word Seder means order. And if you ever want to feel anything in life, you need to structure it. You need to have some order. Does anybody know a book that we use that sounds like the Seder? It's the Sitter. Because what is the Sitter? It's the same word from the word Seder, which means order. Because what's the goal of praying? It's to feel something emotionally. The rabbis in the Talmud define prayers of Odas Shebelev, service of the heart. But if you want to feel something, and you don't want it just to be a passing, fleeting emotion, you want that feeling to really permeate you. You need to eat something. You need to ritualize it. You need to really do something to experience. The night of the Seder is supposed to be an experience. And maybe that's one of the reasons why there's so much wine at the night of the Seder. How many cups of wine?
Four.
Anybody know why do we have four cups? I'm going to give you some tidbits. If you want to take any notes, you can take out your phone. If you're on your phone tonight, I just assume because that's how you're taking notes. You're not just... ignoring me and calling, texting your friend to support. Or make believe you're taking notes and you're really texting your friend. So, Brian. So, there's four different expressions of freedom in the Bible, in the Torah. That God redeemed us and He emancipated us and He brought us. There's also a very more, a less well-known, less obvious reference when Joseph, the biblical personality, was in prison. First sexual harassment, maybe in history.
What?
Was Joseph being thrown into prison. Interesting, it was a woman on a man. She was making sexual advances on Joseph. He wouldn't... And he ended up going to prison for refusing her advances. And in prison, he developed a wonderful reputation of being a good dream interpreter. And when Pharaoh's wine steward was thrown into prison and he had a dream that troubled him, he shared the dream with Joseph that involved Pharaoh's cup. And the word cup was mentioned four times. And the rabbis say that that's another reason why we have a Seder with four cups. So you guys have some wine? I'm just going to pour myself a little. Everybody pour yourself a little wine. Who doesn't like some wine? You can take the water.
Does it matter if it's red or white?
No, you could use red or white at your Seder table. Most people prefer red because they consider it more chashuv, more distinguished, more significant. But a better white might be better or preferable than a poor red. Follow? At your Seder table. All right. But we also need that we didn't take out.
Can you? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's pass these around. These things are called the
Adada.
know I passed around a sheet already, but I'm going to pass around a booklet. This is a nice Haggadah. There are many, many different Haggadot with different people's interpretations.
Haggadah means tell over.
Because there's a mitzvah on the night of the Seder to tell over.
The news is real stuff.
That's right. The Exodus.
Thank you.
Okay. So open up your Haggadah. So the Seder has structures, and it's got an order. How many steps in the Seder?
15.
Page 19, it's got 15 steps, and 15 guided steps to your Seder. The number 15 is significant in Jewish tradition. I put that on your handout, because those are the same number of steps that were there in order to ascend to the temple. Same number of psalms that begin with the words, a song of ascents. Shir ha-ma'alot. If you go in Israel to a... ma'alot? What is that? Right, to feel la'alot, is to go up, making aliyahs, to go up. What do they call... What's an elevator in Israel?
Ma'alit.
Same word, right? To go up. So,
Ma'alit.
Yeah. So these are... It's all about going up. It happens to be the 15 steps in my favorite song. There are 15 stanzas. It's all about going up. So the idea is that the Seder is we're using all of this to go up and to be elevated. Now, let's go through the Seder plate very, very quickly. There's a Seder plate on page 18, and there's a Seder plate in front of you. And we've got the matzah. How many pieces of matzah do you need to have on your Seder? Three pieces. Three. Anybody know why three? Three pieces. Let's see where it is. One. Two. This one is already broken. Three. Three types of Jews. Kohen, Levi, and Israelite. Anybody know what the difference between this matzah and the matzahs that you have before you?
Those are factory made. These are handmade.
About $20 a pound. but we're going to get to the Afikomen soon. So the night of the matz and the night of the Seder, we want to try to have what's called shmura matzah. Now this just happens to be handmade shmura matzah, as opposed to machine made. Much more expensive. Although some people prefer the machine made over the handmade. Anybody know why? Even though this looks much more authentic, it may not be as good because, as one of my teachers in Israel, one of my rabbis said, machines don't make mistakes and people do. But so you can get either one, but it is good to have what's called shmura matzah. Shmura means guarded. Now, we always guard matzah. What is matzah, actually? What is it?
Unleavened bread.
But it's basically any one of the five types of grains that has not come into contact with water for 18 minutes or longer. So if you go to a matzah baking factory, what they do is they put in the any one of the five types of grains, wheat, spelt, oat, rye, and barley. You can make matzah out of those five types of things. And you just want to make sure it doesn't ferment. That which we're not permitted to eat on Passover, pastries, chametz, leaven, anybody know? Same five types of grain, which did ferment. So the only difference between chametz and matzah, that which is a mitzvah to eat, and that which is forbidden from being eaten is time. Why is time important on the night of the Seder? Passover, slaves. First mitzvah the Jewish people were given after being taken out of slavery was Rosh Chodesh. We follow the lunar calendar. It was to basically set their own calendar and do what you want with your time. Time in Judaism is the most precious, precious commodity. I always say you can blow money. Mm-hmm. I don't advise it, but if you do, okay, you get over it. You know, you can make money back. You can never make time back. Mm-hmm. And time is something which is incredibly important. One of the things that we are celebrating is the freedom to use our time wisely. Like in the United States, in America, we celebrate freedom. But nobody tells you what to do with your freedom. That's up to you. right? That the American celebration of freedom is the freedom in and of itself. Judaism's concept of freedom is a little more specific. It's the freedom to live in accordance with your highest self. And in order to do that, you have to use time wisely. That's why the idea of killing time is not a Jewish concept. My teachers never liked that phrase, killing time. You need a break. You've got to chill out. You can't keep going all the time. But you don't want to be wasting time. That's not wasting time. That's productive when you're taking a break in order to be able to be productive, in order to be able to enjoy life. Okay, so that's time, and that's the matzah. What else is on the plate? We're going to get through each one. You know what? We'll go through the plate as we get to that ritual. So let's start. What's the first of the 15 steps? You want to sing it with me? Hadeh shurchat karpas yachat ma'id rachta mohotzi matzah maror korech Shulchan Orech, Safon Barech, Halel Nirtza. You can also sing them in English. Doesn't sound as good, but you don't have to say the Haggadah in Hebrew, by the way. You could say things in English. The most important thing is to really engage people at the table and have a fruitful, meaningful conversation using the Haggadah as a springboard. And a lot of people get annoyed because they just want to get to the meal. Come on, let's just keep reading. Read it. I saw this great Sebastian Maniscalco. Anybody watch him? He's the best. So he's Italian. And he got to the Seder. Did I share this last week? I don't know if I shared this. Maybe so. I did another Seder somewhere else. And he says, we got to the table, and there was no bread. He's like, I'm Italian. We have to have bread. I need to dip it into something. So then, and then they handed out the books. And he says, we're going to do reading. And I said, reading? For how long? Where's the food? He says, about 2 hours. We'll do some reading, and then we'll eat. I'm like, that's not going to cut it. So anyway, it was very funny. You should watch it. It's worthwhile. It's a cute little skit. Sebastian Maniscalco. He's great. All right, so the first step is Kiddush. So let's do it together. We're not going to do the whole Kiddush, because on what night? When is Passover next week, guys?
Monday night.
So you want to sit down to the Seder on Monday night. And the first thing you do to kick off the Seder, first of all, you have to have the Seder plate, get your matzahs ready, get your items, and we'll go through the items as we hit them tonight. So we start on page 20, or page 21, with the Borei Pir Geffen, with the blessing over the wine. Let's just do that together on page 20. All together. Baruch Atzo Adonai Eleinu Melech Olam Borei Pir Geffen. Now, what didn't I just do that you should do on the night of your Seder? I just drank the wine, but I didn't what? I didn't lean. Why do you lean?
Yeah, why do you?
You lean when you drink, because kings lean, and tonight you're supposed to feel a little freedom, like a king. Think of the old Cleopatra movies, but they're on those fancy couches and popping a grape into their mouth, you know? But on page 20, what's that? Why the left? Anybody know? I don't have a deep, like, Kabbalistic reason. I'm going to give you a physiological reason. You want to make sure, Brian, you'll appreciate this. Rashi, the great biblical commentator, says this in the Talmud, and Rashi lived in the 1000s. He said you want to make sure that the drink goes down the esophagus and not the trachea.
Ooh.
And he said leaning to the left will be helpful to that. Is that true? You don't think so? He talked about it's in Rashi in the Talmud. There's an entire tractate which was written over 2,000 years ago, and Rashi lived. Rashi commented on it 1,000 years ago, and he wrote one theory about leaning to the left was so that make sure it goes down the right pipe.
He's going to tell you that's where the heart is.
That's where the heart, the left side. So you lean to the left. I don't know if that's the way the kings and, you know, ancient kings would lean when they ate. You know, they didn't really lean. They would be on, like, couches. So they were kind of leaning. They didn't just sit upright when they ate. Mm-hmm. It was a sign of royalty. Another little sign of royalty, by the way, is don't pour your own wine. You're an important guy. Have somebody else pour your wine. Okay.
Some people bring pillows too, right?
Yeah. A lot of some people bring a pillow to make it more comfortable. There's also custom to wear what's called a kittel, which is a white robe at the Seder. Does anyone have anyone wears a kittel at the Seder? These are just different customs. They're not rules. I'll give you the basic rules so you know that you're hitting what you have to hit on the night of the Seder, but a lot of other beautiful customs as well. Now, turn to page 22. After the Kiddush, and by the way, there's a brach of Shechianu, that God has kept us alive. And then we have the Orchats. Look at the English there on 22. It says, the head of the household, and according to many opinions, all participants, wash their hands as if to eat bread. You know how we wash for bread on Shabbat? But we're going to wash for what's called the karpas. Now here's the karpas. Parsley. Supposed to be something green. Although in our family, our karpas were potatoes. Anybody have potatoes? It's karpas? We always had potatoes. You know how you know your family's from Poland? Potatoes. That's all they had was potatoes. They didn't have anything green. Okay, so, but something which is a vegetable. And it's supposed to represent spring or renewal. What month does the holiday of Passover fall out in? It's the month of Nisan, which is spring. The Jewish people are reborn as they are being emancipated from slavery. It's rebirth, renewal. And it's new. You don't have to everyone get up and wash. Now, we usually only wash for bread. And here's a little trick. Anytime you don't know why you're doing something at the Seder, here's a little refrain for you. Repeat after me. To get the children to ask. Say it.
To get the children to ask.
If you don't know why, and it might be right. Like probably half the time, it's probably right. But we just do things out of the ordinary. Rabbi Soloveitchik told the story that when he was a little boy, the great rabbis of the 20th century, his grandfather was the famed Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, very erudite scholar in Eastern Europe in the 19th century, that he showed up to his family Seder with a pot on his head. Just like a cooking pot on his head. And little Rabbi Sol, well, he wasn't Rabbi, he was like 6 or 7 at the time, was giggling, you know? All the kids sitting around the table. Zadie looks funny, has a pot on his head.
Yeah.
And he just did it to get him to, like, wake up a little. Hey, why, Zadie, what's with the pot? Oh, there's a pot on my head. Do you know why tonight is different? And it's a prop, and it engages people. Some people come to the Seder wearing a costume. They dress up as Pharaoh or as Moses or, I don't know, you don't have to. You have to do any of this stuff, but you want to try to like mix it up a little, try to make things exciting. We make a bracha on the karpas. If you guys want to pick up a little parsley on your Seder plate, here, I'll give you a little. You have a little parsley?
Thank you.
Here. Split my parsley with you. We wash and we make the bracha. You ready? Mm-hmm. Baruch. Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Borei Pri Ha'adama. All right. That is the blessing over something that comes from the ground.
If you have to eat it?
If you make the blessing, you should eat it. If you didn't make the blessing, then... Okay. Now, you then take the middle matzah, look at page 24, and you break it into two. This is called yachatz. Guys, we're up to like step 3 already. At this rate, they'll be out of here soon. You can't put your karpas back.
Like, I just took one.
It's fine. I'm just kidding. Okay. I'm going to break it. And what does it say? Break the middle matzah in two. Put the smaller part back between the two matzahs.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we do with this? Zeke mentioned before.
Yeah. Hide it.
This is going to become the what? What does afikomen mean?
For children.
That's where the kids make demands. But afikomen is a Greek word.
To search.
You all prepared some Greek for tonight's class, didn't you?
To search.
No?
I thought it was dessert, but I...
It means dessert.
Oh.
Oh.
It's supposed to be the last thing. What does it represent? What does it symbolize? It symbolizes the Paschal offering. What was the Paschal offering?
Mm-hmm.
How was Passover celebrated for centuries? When the Jewish temple stood in Jerusalem,
it
was this offering. It was a sacrifice. What was the sacrifice called? Korban Pesach, Paschal offering. We don't have a temple anymore. We don't have sacrifices. So we have a matzah to represent it. What you do is you take it and put it in, I don't know, let's use this. Put it in a napkin or something. It's chametz.
We can have a paper towel. Hold on, I'll get it.
Yeah, we'll just grab me like a towel or something. I don't know if it's going to cut it.
It's not going to.
Yeah, perfect. Between the two plates. That's good. And then you negotiate something with the kids at the table that at the end of the meal, if they can find it, you'll hide it. Then they get a great present. You figure out the present is. Why do we do this? Keeps the kids up. That's it. You're like, I'm going to wait up until I get my present. Remember what you would do when you were like six for like a stupid little nothing? Right? We were such idiots. Our parents would tell, oh, if you do this, wait here for the next 4 hours and I'll get you a little trinket for 50 cents. Oh, okay. So that's Dr. Coleman. Okay, put it here. All right. Okay, now follow with me the last on page 25. Let's do this together called Halachmania. You then take the middle piece, lift it up. Just take the middle piece and lift it up. And we say the words, this is the bread. Say it with me, guys, 25. This is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is needy, let him come and celebrate Passover. Now we are here. Next year, may we be in the land of Israel. Now we are slaves. Next year, may we be free men. Okay. Now, what is that saying? Pay attention to the words. Is it true what we just did? What did we just do there? Look at the language. This is the bread of affliction our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. By the way, we have a tradition that this is what the pharaohs fed. Anybody know why they would feed us this cardboard-tasting stuff? It takes a long time to digest.
This thing?
Yeah, and if you were a pharaoh and you didn't want your people sitting around talking too much and hanging out and socializing over dinner, you'll give them something that they can eat quickly and it'll just continue with them in the fields. Okay, and the reason we break the bread is because a poor man never has a full piece. But what are we doing by getting up and saying, whoever's hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever's needy, let him come and celebrate with us. It's a little late to be inviting people to the Seder at this point, don't you think? Is this a real invitation? Like, it's Wednesday now. If you wanted to have somebody at your Seder, and who should you try to invite you to your Seder, by the way? Who should you try to have at your Seder? Someone who else doesn't have a Seder.
Yeah.
Either maybe they don't have the money, maybe socially, their family is away and they're here in New York. That's why MGE has a Seder every year. Not everybody goes home to their family. This wine's really good. So you want to invite someone. So what is this? Why are you getting up and going? Anybody wants this? Anyone who wants to join us? It's very insincere. So it's really a symbol. It's not saying that you're really inviting. The inviting has to be now. It's Wednesday night. Think now. Who do you want to have at your Seder? Who doesn't have the means? Who could really use to be invited? It'd be a beautiful thing to do that. And what we're saying at the Seder is that we're free, but what does a Jew do with their freedom? What do we do with our blessings in life? We share them. And it's not enough to just sit around the table with your loved ones and your families. That's why there's another mitzvah. That we're supposed to perform before the holiday. I want to encourage everybody to do this. It's called Ma'ot Chitim. Leah, if you can do me a huge favor. Ma'ot Chitim, we don't take up a collection, but Ma'ot means money, Chitim for wheat. It's so that poor people could be able to afford matzah and a seder for themselves. Mm-hmm. The Jewish Center on their website has a link that you can donate. If we can share that link, I think we should send it out in whatever, like email, maybe on Friday.
Sounds good.
Can we do that? And maybe we could share it with this very special group of people. It's to the Leo Young Memorial Fund. Rabbi Leo Young's picture used to hang right over there, but it freaked everyone out. So I took it off because people stopped coming to MGE. He was a very well-respected rabbinic figure in American Jewish history. He was a rabbi of the synagogue downstairs for over 40 years. He brought the Lubavitch Rebbe and a lot of others who were trying to escape Nazi-occupied Europe to the United States. He was the rabbi here during the Second World War. And there's a fund that's set up in his memory that specifically goes to poor people before Passover and all the holidays. So we're going to share that with you guys. If anyone, you get $20, $40, whatever it is that you can afford that you want to give to help somebody who could use it. The money gets distributed in Israel and in New York to help people celebrate the holiday. That's called Maot Chitzim. So even if you're not inviting anyone to your home, that's another way of, you know, fulfilling the mitzvah. Very important. Okay, what's the next part in 24-25? I'm not going to ask the youngest in the room to embarrass themselves, unless you would like to embarrass yourself by singing the Manishtana. What is the Manishtana? Let's sing it a little. Manishtana ha-layla hazeh mikal ha-laylats mikal ha-laylats. Why is this night different from all the other nights? Ha-lay-lay-lay-lay-lay. Now we go through. You're doing these out of ordinary things to basically solicit questions from the children. But it's not just the children. We use the kids as an excuse. Because we're all curious. Why is this night different? Why are we eating this weird kind of bread and not normal bread? Why are we eating this thing called maror, the bitter herbs? Which looks incredibly gross, by the way.
This one?
That's charosis. This is the bitter herbs. Not so bad. We'll talk about it when we get to the bitter herbs. And why are we dipping so much? I don't know if we dipped. Did we dip before? Were we supposed to dip already?
Into salt water?
Yeah, what gets salt? What gets dipped into the salt water?
Vegetable does.
Oh, we didn't do that. I forgot to do that. It's okay. When you get to your Seder, remember, when you take it, thank you for returning this. When you get your karpas, dip it in the salt water, because this represents renewal. And what does the salt water represent?
Tears.
Tears of our ancestors. Mm-hmm. So why are we putting something positive into something negative? And we do the same thing with the maror also. What do we dip the maror, which represents the bitterness that our ancestors experienced? We dip it in the sweet stuff, the charosis. What's the idea of this dipping the negative with the positive?
Bittersweet memories.
What's that? Yeah, and what is history? What is life? That's life. Life's got a little sweetness, and life's got a little bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to deal with the bitterness by, you know, putting it together as much as we possibly can, combining it with the sweetness. So that's a very, very important idea in general. By the way, I'll get to the maror, I'll talk about it afterwards. So, by the way, if the youngest person at the table doesn't want to get up and say the manishtana, has that happened that you don't want to do it? Some like 5-year-olds having a temper tantrum, you're like scarring them for life. They're going to be in therapy for the next 10 years because you made them say Hebrew that they're not comfortable with in front of 20 of their... although my kids used to come on when they were little, they always like learned it in another language. One year they did it in Spanish. They don't really speak French, but they taught them how to do the Manishtana in French. It was kind of sweet. My daughter learned how to do it in Yiddish. My father, blessed memory, melted when she did that, you know, to hear, you know, because he grew up with Yiddish. That was very, very beautiful. So you can do that, or you can just do it in English. You can do it in English. Now, the kid asked the question, why is this night different from all other nights? What's your responsibility as a parent or as an adult at the table? What are you supposed to do when someone asks a question? Try to answer it. So how do you answer the kid's question?
With a question.
Well, that's the way the rabbis in the Talmud always answer a question with a question. Well, what would the answer be? It's the next line, but don't look down. See if you can come up with it on your own. Why is this night different, Eric, from all the other nights? Because?
It's Passover.
And what happened on Passover? Just say it straight.
We escaped for freedom.
Yeah, we escaped. Your great-great-great-great-grandma was a slave, and we got out on this night. And we don't take that for granted. It's thousands of years later, and we're still making a big deal about it. Now, that's only one answer. There's a debate in the Talmud how to answer the child's question. Do you just do what Eric said, which is give him the straight historical answer? But there's also another answer.
God freed us.
Well, God freed us. That's answer one. That's more the historical answer. And by the way, take a look on page 25. That's the first paragraph. 26 and 27. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, but Hashem took us out from there with a mighty hand and outstretched arm. And in Hebrew it's Avadim Hayino Hayino Lefaro B'Mitzrayim B'Mitzrayim Ayavadim Hayino Lefaro B'Mitzrayim B'Mitzrayim. Right, fine. What's another answer? Keep your hand on 26, 27. Just keep your finger there and skip with me, because the rabbis have a second opinion. And they think we should answer the child not with a historical answer, but with a theological one, which is found on 31. Look on 31, but keep your finger on 26, 27. Look at 30, 31. Second paragraph. Originally, our ancestors were idol worshippers. Did you know that? How could you tell the Jew from the Egyptian? We were worshiping the same gods as them. And God took us out of what? Why did Hashem take us out of Egypt? This is the part they didn't teach us in Hebrew school. This is not just about a victim-oppressor story. It wasn't just that they were bad and we were the victims. But God took us out of Egypt, why? Simply to emancipate us? Why else? What does that mean?
We're looking at, like, you know, statues with Ra and not getting circumcised or following.
Yeah, and that's why we make such a big deal about the plagues. Why did God have to bring all those plagues on the Egyptians? We're going to get to the plagues in a few moments. Why? Why didn't just take us out? Why do you have to turn the Nile to blood?
I'm a brand new Jewish. I would say that there's a completely miracle.
Right, God performed all these miracles. But why did God have to perform all those miracles? God could have just taken us out of Egypt. If the whole point was simply to get us out of being enslaved, why did he need 10 miracles? Why did he need 10 plagues? Because it's fun watching them suffer? No. That's why we take the wine out. Because we don't want even our enemies to suffer. What's the reason?
It doesn't show that we're different and we're a powerful nation and we have this, like, protection under this one God to create our own nation.
Okay, good. And how did the plague show that? Very good.
Because the Egyptians were able to mirror each one of our plagues except for the last one. And that's what set us apart.
Yeah, well, I think according to tradition, they were able to mirror, like, the first three or four.
Yeah.
But once they couldn't mirror, it was basically showing who was the real, because who did they actually believe was God in antiquity?
Pharaoh.
Pharaoh. They worshipped Pharaoh as a deity. What else did they worship as a deity?
Statue.
What else? The sun.
Oh.
What was one of the plagues that took care of that?
Darkness.
God turned the sun off for 3 days. It's your God. What else did they worship? They worshipped the Nile.
Oh, water.
Right, because the Nile irrigated ancient Egypt, so God turned it into blood.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those 10 plagues could be explained this way. Frogs, my favorite one. The goddess of fertility was in ancient Egypt was a frog. So each one of those plagues, it was another way of God demonstrating, not only to Egypt, but who else? To the Jews, because we believed in them too. That these are not gods, they're just a creation of the one and only God. So God wasn't just playing with them for the sake of playing with them. This was an educational experience. And that's what the Seder is supposed to be. This is an opportunity to talk about your religion, your faith. What do you believe in? I can't see God, so why do I believe in God? How do I know He really exists? I mean, there are all sorts of crazy stories going on. Well, if God is such a good God, then how did He allow October 7th to happen? Or the Holocaust. On the other hand, I just heard this crazy story. I'm trying to remember who I shared what story with. But I don't think I said this last week about the guys in the tank corps. Did I share it last week here?
Mm-hmm.
I did, so I'm not sharing it again. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in Gaza that, like, makes people feel God is watching out for us.
Not everyone.
What's that?
Not everybody heard.
It's a good share.
No, there was two guys. One guy was trying to get the rest of his platoon, a tank unit, to put on tefillin. And there was one holdout. He wouldn't do it, so he promised him free dinner if he put on the tefillin. As the guy was putting on tefillin, the sun was getting in his eyes, so he asked the tank. You know, they were off duty, and the tank was right there. He asked his friend on the tank if he would move the tank a little to block the sun so he could put the tefillin on. And the minute he did that, the RPG whizzed by and missed everybody. And then they found out the Hamas terrorist who shot it and took him out. So, like, on one hand, oh, where was God? On the other hand, like, how do you explain that? You know, we try to find God in these little stories. It's a good thing to talk about at your Seder table. I mean, there was a terrible scare in Israel last Saturday night. Do you realize what a miracle that was?
Yeah.
That was an overt miracle. Somebody just sent me this thing of quoting a physicist from Israel who explained, like, the chances that all, that 99% of all those rockets, 300 rockets, were shot at Israel. That, I mean, there was a little girl, a Bedouin girl, that was injured. And it's an unbelievable thing. We're living in crazy, crazy times. And it seems like, you know, a lot of this is still happening. There's no Pharaoh. But this is also supposed to give us a little inspiration. Like, if God and the Jewish people could survive Pharaoh, do you know how powerful the Egyptian Empire was?
It's like one of the world's strongest.
The Egyptian Empire was the longest and possibly most powerful empire that ever... They were an empire for 1,000 years before we were enslaved. That's how long they lasted. And we believe that, you know, we know, go to Egypt today, and there's no connection between Egypt and the Egyptian Empire. Go to Rome, Italy today, there's no connection between Italy today and the Roman Empire. You go to England today, there's maybe a little more, you know, the British Empire. They got a few colonies left in the world. The only people that continue to survive, and think about it also, there is no other ethnicity as tiny as the Jewish people that have not only survived but thrived in other people's lands for so long. So how did that happen? You know, is that a fluke of history? Coincidence? We are 1/5 of 1% of the world's population. And somehow we have not been physically annihilated or culturally assimilated, which is what necessarily happens to every other small group living in other people's countries or cultures. And we like over 20% of Nobel Prizes have been won by Jews. With all the persecution and anti-Semitism, even in Israel, it ranked number 5 on the happiness chart. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
People living in Israel responded that they're happier than most other countries in the world, including the United States, which was like 21. They were number 5. And look what's going on there. So you try to explain that. I don't know. Page 26, and those are the answers we give the kids. We were slaves and God took us out, or we were idol worshippers and God took us out to become what? Not only believers in one and only God, but to get the whole world to believe in God. How did we do with that project? Pretty good. Because, I mean, I'm not just including Judaism, but if you include Christianity and Islam, that believe in a one God, okay, maybe with certain, you know, from our perspective, distortions. But still, they have educated the world, billions of people, to believe in this one and only God.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. There's one little people, you know? So we were slaves, and then, and I'll tell you something else also inspirational. You know, that's why you speak to soldiers in Israel, and they have the morale in Israel. It's unbelievable. I was there a few months ago, like after October 7th. They're pumped. They're like, we've been through this before, and we're going to get through this, and we're going to be great. And you need to pull the lens back a little and look at Jewish history. We're gonna prevail. We always do. And that has everything to do with our relationship with God. Because I can think of no other rational explanation. But we're smarter than other people. We work harder. It's a little arrogant to say that. I think we're pretty smart and industrious, but I don't know. There are a lot of other people that are, I think, just as smart. I remember I went to yeshiva, and I was convinced, oh, Jews are so smart. You know, like. Then I went to law school, and I met some other pretty smart people who weren't Jewish. It's like, oh, okay. So what is it? I don't think it's just, it's not our IQs. I'm sure that helped, okay? We are a smart, well-educated people, okay? But to explain it fully that way, I'm babbling, all right, whatever it is. But these are the kind of conversations you try to have at your Seder. 26 and 30, and then there's a story on 27. It happened, Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Joshua, the second last paragraph, Rabbi Elezer, Rabbi Akiva, all these people were gathered at the Seder. This is in Israel. They lived in the Roman times. Can you imagine what they were going through? And they were up all night. Some people say they were up all night, not just talking about the Seder, but what to do about the Romans. So we have a history, actually, of people celebrating Passover, trying to figure out their own redemption story. And that's no different today. Because, I'm just telling you, if you haven't felt it, the world is a very different place for the Jew. Everywhere. And we are going through, I think, what Rabbi Akiva did. He lived 2,000 years ago, and he's thinking about the Exodus from Egypt, which happened 1,500 years before that. But they're trying to figure their way out of that pickle, living under the Roman yoke. And we're trying to figure out our situation with Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran. And professors on college campus who can't decry or call out anti-Semitism. Like, what's that? And how do we deal with that? These are not inappropriate conversations to have. I know you don't want politics at the table. Nobody wants politics at the table. You see if there's a way of talking about this without getting too political, because I think we'd really be remiss if we didn't speak about this stuff. It's very relevant to the story. Let's turn to page 28. One of my favorite parts of the Haggadah on the night of the Seder is to talk about the four sons. And you got the wise son, the wicked son, the simple son, the son who's unable to ask. They're all sitting around the Seder table. I don't know. You got to be careful with this. You want to like pick people at the table who you think resembles who you think resembles who. And then they can read that paragraph. I don't know who's going to volunteer to be the rebellious son. Okay, and then the son who can't even ask. What do you tell? What about the kid who's just sitting there, like, just completely? What do you do with that person at the Seder? Throw a little piece of parsley at them. What do you do? What do you do with them at the Seder? What does it say? As for the son who was unable to ask, last paragraph, you must initiate the subject for him. As it is stated, you shall tell your son that day, it is because of this that Hashem did so for me when I went out of Egypt. You have to engage everybody at the Seder. But you see what this is? This is a metaphor. This whole thing is a metaphor for life. It's not just your Seder. What do you do with that kid or yourself who feels a little on the sidelines of Judaism, doesn't really feel like in it? You got to pull that Jew in. You got to say, hey, you're here. You know, Lubavitcher Rebbe coined a phrase called the fifth son. Anybody know who the fifth son is? There's no five sons. There's only four sons. Who's the fifth?
Didn't show up.
He's the one who didn't come. Why? Where is he? Where is he?
Lost.
He's at the gym. Maybe he's playing golf. Maybe he's out in a movie. He's just nowhere terribly important. It's just that Jewish history and the Seder is just not important. It's not his fault necessarily. Nobody inspired him to teach him why this is important for us. So always got to make sure that people who are at the Seder are engaged. Or else they next year may be the fifth son who doesn't show. And that's a big problem, even though the Seder, by the way, is the most celebrated Jewish ritual. There's just an opportunity here to engage each other. All right, let's turn to the page 30 or 31. You're supposed to lift your cups, and then we'll sing together. On page 30 on the bottom, V'hi she'amda, V'hi she'amda, L'avoteinu v'lanu, Alelai, alelai. Look at the words in the English. It is this that has stood by our fathers and for us, for not only one has risen us up against us to annihilate us, but in every generation they rise up against us to annihilate us. Now, I'm telling you, most people, as of last year, will be like, come on, I'm in Palm Beach, Florida. I'm in White Plains, Long Island. Nobody's rising up to destroy me. It happens in every generation. They rise up against us to annihilate us, but God rescues us from their hands. And it's this could depress you, this line, but it also could inspire you a little to say that, like, yeah, it's happening again. But we're going to get through this. We always do. That's a very, very important point. You don't have to say every word in the Haggadah. Okay, the most important thing is to have meaningful exchange with your family. I'm trying to give you the highlights. We're going to finish up in a few minutes. But I would skip right now from 32 on top. I would skip all the way to the 10 plagues on page 38 or 39. We have this little ritual where you take your pinky, put it in the cup of wine, and every time you say a plague, you take out a little wine. What's the idea behind that? You know? Anybody know? Why? What's the deal? Yeah, so just say the 10 plagues. Why do I have to make the table all dirty? And stick my finger into my wine. It's not very elegant. You know, I thought that too. It could be that the Jewish people marked their homes on the night of the night that God was slaying the firstborn of Egypt. That's how the holiday got its name, Passover. Right? How did they know to pass? How did God know? Well, God knows everything, but He passed over the homes of the. So they had to put a little blood from the Paschal offering, which was the Egyptian god. It was the lamb. They worshipped the lamb. And basically, it was the Jewish people showing that we're no longer worshipping animals. We might even sacrifice one or two to our God. And we take the blood, put it on the lintel, and God passed over. So that could be one interpretation. Good. Anybody else? Yeah, Brian?
Why is the plague celebratory, but the plagues are tragic?
In what sense? I mean, they're great in one sense.
Sure, but
they're educational, but they're tragic in what sense? Well, they caused human suffering. Okay, the Egyptians had nothing to drink when the Nile turned into blood. Okay, so we're not so happy. I don't know, are we happy? Do you cheer when you find out that a Hamas terrorist has been taken out? So I cheer, but I'm not supposed to really cheer that someone died. I'm supposed to really cheer that someone was saved. Because with every... Okay, this is my opinion. I'm trying not to get political. But with every Hamas terrorist that's killed, and I'm not saying they won't replicate, but there's less evil in the world. And there's one less person that's trying to kill me and my people. So I'm happy about that. I'm not happy he had to die, though. I used to have this conversation with my kids when they were little. We watched Batman. We were a big Batman family. And I always said to my kids, what would be the best, when they were getting into fights, and Batman was, you know, kicking bat butt. And I said, what would be a better situation? Only one of my kids got this. That the bad guys all get killed? So most of the time my kids said, yeah. And I said, what would be a better outcome? What's a better outcome? What's that? Yeah, the bad guys did tshuva. They repented, and they saw the evil of their ways. And Hamas put up a big white flag and said, we've been brainwashed. We could be living in peace with you. This is ridiculous. That would be an outcome that we would really cheer for. You're not really supposed to cheer if somebody was killed. On the other hand, you should cheer when you're saved, if your life is saved. So there's that very subtle distinction. And this is very interesting. A human being can simultaneously experience both. We have the ability to be subtle in our experiencing emotions. Angels can't. Which is why the Medrash says that when the angels sang praise to God, after the Egyptians were drowned at the Sea of Reeds, God got angry with them. But when the Jewish people sang praise of God, He lauded them. Why? Because an angel can't experience two different emotions simultaneously, but a human being can. And God understood that even though we were cheering, that we were slaves, we were still upset that they were harmed. Because it's a human life. Would anyone be here upset when if Hitler was killed?
The world was cheering.
But, you know, the destruction of evil is something to cheer about. but we're really focused on having been saved. Something to think about. So we take a little wine out. As Brian said, the wine represents freedom, and the wine represents, you know, we make toasts on wine, we make a l'chaim on wine. It's joyous. It's a joyous beverage. All right. Take a look on page 40. Share one last thing. Ilo ilo hotziyanu hotziyanu min mitzrayim v'lo asabahem shifatim da'ayim. You just tell Aaron to mention that they're all invited to the Yosef's musical meditation at 9. And if you can, thank you so much. And also, Leah, if you can. Leah, and that we're having services the
yes,
2 days of Yom Tov.
Right.
Okay, thank you. So, I'm sorry. Die, 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 die Had God done A for us, but not done B, that would have been enough. Had God split the sea for us, but not let us through, that would have been enough. Had God, you know, drowned our oppressors, but not provided for our needs in the desert, that would have been enough. Is that true? It would have been enough had God destroyed the Egyptians, but let us starve in the wilderness? That would have been enough. Why are we saying that would have been enough? What's this whole song about? What do you think?
Nothing.
What's that?
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop the oppression.
Right, but why are we saying that, you know, thank you God for doing A, and if you had just done A and not B, but then when you look at B, you're like, oh, how could we have survived without B? And then, oh, B without C. Okay, how is that expressing gratitude? Good. This is all about gratitude. Gratitude lesson number one, be specific. And if you want to be, don't just say, oh, the meal was great. Thank you for having me for dinner. What do you really want to say?
Well, we specify everything.
You want to be specific. Yeah, you want to say, that chicken was delicious. How can I get the recipe? And then the person thinks that your gratitude is real. If you just say, dinner was lovely, thank you. It's just like generic. It's like just an Emily Post moment. It's not like you're really... So what you're doing is, of course we want everything. We want as many blessings as we can get from God. But when you take them apart, you say, that would have been enough. That warranted a blessing in and of itself. Thank you, Hashem, for that. And that's a very important thing for other people too. That we don't always wait for everything to say thank you. You can kind of hone in and say, that is worthy of gratitude. Really important thing. People who express gratitude and are grateful people are happier people. You know why? Because you're already feeling happiness over something you have, as opposed to putting your happiness all in the deck of cards like something I don't have. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't be aspirational in life. But if we realize how many blessings we already have, we might actually be a happier people. Mm-hmm. Just having the blessings doesn't make you happy. It gives you the food, it gives you the stuff, which is important, but it doesn't necessarily fill you with joy. Like if you're really grateful. And that's why saying it is important. That's why brachot, blessings in Judaism, are imperative. I tell this to people all the time, you want to be happier in life, start making brachot before you eat. Start making a blessing when you come out of the bathroom. You'll start, because, oh, my plumbing's working. Who cares? You know how amazing that is? That your plumbing is working, you have to spend time with the doctor, no offense, that you don't have to like take medications for this, that, and the other, that you're not in pain, that you're able to just be in health, in good health. It's huge. So pointing that out and recognizing that, the night of the Seder is a huge night to feel gratitude, to express gratitude. Really important. All right, we're going to finish up. Turn to page 42, the last part. On page 42, or in the English 43, through the next three few pages, you should really try to hit. You should try to do this at your Seder, where it says on 43... second to last paragraph, Rabbi Gamliel used to say, whoever has not explained the following three things on Passover has not fulfilled his duty. Passover, Pesach, and then you, I forgot to mention this, is the grossest thing on the Seder plate. It's the shank bone that represents the Paschal offering. You don't have to eat it, just keep it there. And when you just point to it and you say, Passover, Pesach, why did our forefathers eat a Passover offering during the period when the temple still stood? Because God passed over the houses of our fathers in Egypt, and that's how we got the name from this holiday. You point to the shank bone. Turn the page to 44, 45, matzah, point to the matzah. Why do we eat this unleavened bread? Because there wasn't enough time for the bread to rise. We spoke about that last week. Who cares? It didn't have time to rise. Because what it shows is that God is involved in history. He didn't just create the world, put it on automatic timer. He's involved. And the Jewish people were baking bread when they should have been leaving Egypt. They had no idea. God just told them to take their stuff and go. Maror. Okay, by the way, a little trick for Maror. You don't have to use the freshly grated horseradish, but you can't use the jarred horseradish either. That's cheating. Okay, that's for your gefilte fish the rest of the year. Okay, what are you supposed to use for actual maror? Either the freshly grated stuff, or you can use romaine lettuce. And you're not wussing out by having romaine lettuce. I know you feel like you're not being a good Jew by eating romaine lettuce. Just make sure it doesn't have any bugs crawling around, because little bugs, and we don't eat bugs. Mm-hmm. And you want to have enough. So if you're going to use romaine lettuce for your maror, make sure you have a few leaves of romaine lettuce. It's good stuff. It's healthy. And then you dip it a little in the parsley. Okay, it's not dipped in parsley. It's dipped in the horseradish, because I don't know. Okay, and by the way, that's just some horseradish. Anybody know why we have an egg here? It's for another offering that was brought in the times of the temple on the holiday of Passover. I'm just hungry, so we need. And that was the Korban Chagigo. Also, it's a sign of mourning. You know who you give an egg to? Someone who comes back from the cemetery, you give them an egg. Why do you give them an egg? First of all, they're not supposed to have their own meal. The community is supposed to serve the meal. Mm-hmm. Nothing sadder than someone having to make their own meal when they come back from the cemetery. So what is what's the shape of an egg? Right, it's cyclical. It's supposed to represent the nature of life. You might be on the bottom right now, but things will come back. That's a very, very important message of hope for the morning. And we're all mourning the destruction of the temple still. So we put that on the table. People might dip the egg in salt water and make believe you have some salt water. What blessing do you make over an egg? Aruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bedvaro. Unbelievable. Okay. Matzah. So we eat matzah and maror. And then in every generation, we're supposed to look at ourselves, look at 45 at the end, as though we have personally gone out of Egypt. And then you go into the Hallel. And then you make a blessing. How many cups of wine? Four cups, and there's a blessing for each one. You go wash for Hamotzi, look at 48. And then you go eat the matzah. It's pretty self-explanatory, just follow this. Anybody wants to take one of these, you can. I'm sorry, they're very user-friendly.
Do you have to drink the full cup of wine, or?
To try to drink at least a mouthful. Exactly. Ideally, you don't have to drink the full cup, but Rovkos, most of the cup. And the cup should be able to hold 3.3 fluid ounces.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
Right. You don't have to, by the way, you can get yourself some good kosher wine that goes down easy, and that's good. Right? Because I grew up with like the syrupy, heavy Malaga stuff. It was like, kill me now. I was like drunk after the first cup. But it's supposed to be festive. So, you know, invest in your wine, in your kosher wine. There's those great kosher wines. So make the hamotzi, and then you have some matzah. How much matzah are you supposed to eat?
Like a little bit?
Not a little.
A lot?
3/4 of the size of that. Just pick that up, Eric, if you can. That's about 3/4 of that size. Don't cheap out on your matzah. Okay, you're supposed to eat a certain amount. And then after you eat the matzah, you eat the maror. How much maror did we say?
A little bit.
Remember romaine lettuce? Or if you're going to have the freshly grated stuff, it's supposed to be like a shot glass worth amount. Yeah, I know. That's why I go for the romaine lettuce. And then there's a murrah sandwich where you take more matzah, like the same amount, and put some murrah in between. And then you have a sandwich. It's on page 51. And that's it. That's your seder. Then you have the meal. And during the meal, you can do whatever you want during the meal. Enjoy yourself during the meal. And then you have some more prayers and things afterwards. There's another 2 cups of wine still to be drunk after the meal. A little tip. It's good to go around, get everybody involved. You can have everyone do another paragraph. Prepare a little something. Maybe you took some notes from tonight. If you didn't, we taped it.
Where's the tape recorder?
The tape recorder. Hopefully that came out. You can listen to this and share some, you know, tidbits of wisdom at the table. The more you prepare, the more you come and prepare, the better your Seder is going to be. Don't be surprised if your Seder was lame because you just came in and waited for some magic to happen. You got to make the magic happen. You want to involve the kids. You can bring some, like, frogs to the table. Not real frogs. Put them around. Some props. You know, do it up a little. Could be a lot of fun. Any questions about the Seder? Yeah, Zeke.
That's a dumb question. The book is, like, half empty.
What's that?
The book is, like, half empty. You know, halfway through the book. What's the rest of the book?
The rest of it is grace after meals. And then there's some... some more things to do, 2 more cups of wine and prayers, and then there's some songs in the back, which you don't have to do.
Okay. It's usually like the meal and then...
Well, it's the meal, but after the meal, there's still grace after meals and 2 more cups of wine. And we forgot to eat what? You eat the afikomen. It's the last thing you do. Actually, you eat the afikomen before you bench, because it's bread. So you eat the afikomen before you bench. It's a great question. Yeah. I don't know. Yehuda, is there a good transliterated Haggadah?
I'm sure there is.
I've never seen one. If you want, by the way, I don't make a commitment. There's a book there. My friend Aaron Goldscheider wrote a beautiful Haggadah with the commentaries of Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and Shlomo Karlbach. I'll show it to you afterwards. It's right in there. I would get that. It'll give you some really juicy tidbits. What do we wish each other on Passover? Chag Sameach or Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Anybody interested who needs an actual Seder? We're going to be having one.
On Monday.
Monday night downtown.
Tuesday
night here.
If you need, just go on the website. You can sign up. We'll also be having MGE services on Shabbat. Of course, this Shabbat, Friday night at 6:45. And Saturday morning at 9:30, I'm going to be doing a Q&A, Ask the Rabbi session on Saturday morning. It's part of the service. And then we'll be having services on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week for Passover as well. And then Monday and Tuesday of the following, besides Shabbat. So we'll be here a lot. Yeah.
It said in the little book that you're going to be doing like minions every 9:30 on the 10th floor.
Say that again.
Yeah, second days. Services
yeah.
Up here on the 10th floor.
Yeah. Tuesday morning and Wednesday morning. 100%. Happy Passover, everyone. Thank you all for being here. Our next class, Leah, what are we doing? What's our next?
From Destruction to Redemption on May 1st.
Okay, that is... I'm giving a little crash course from the Shoah to the creation of the State of Israel. I hope you can come to that. Some really important history. We have to stop getting our history from TikTok and start learning it for real. So we're going to be doing that about both the Holocaust and the creation of the State of Israel. That is in how many Wednesdays? In 2 Wednesdays. Is that right?
May 1st.
May 1st. Wednesday night, May 1st. That'll be our next class here on Wednesday night. Okay, guys? And then the week... Well, then we'll keep telling you about other stuff after. Happy Pesach, everyone. You can take an egg with you if you'd like, or some parsley.
This was amazing. I learned a lot.
I think.
Maybe I didn't make it clear.
Because you're a little upset that people have to suffer. Yeah. Well, like, taking a little wine out of it because I'm celebrating that I was saved, but I'm not so happy that.